I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton taking your questions at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, next few listeners have questions about trees. The first saying their front yard faces south and the trees they've planted seem to have issues with the bark on the trunk peeling and cracking. They've read that this may be due to the warm sun and the cold of winter. Any trees that you would recommend that would be better or any other or any good remedies for this problem?
Yeah, there's actually some pretty decent remedies. If they wanted to, they could actually just get water-based latex paint, mix it one-to-one by volume with water, and then paint the trunks. Now, I know that sometimes it looks a little silly, but that would prevent further sun scald in the winter. The other alternative is to get a tree tape, which is a fabric, white-colored tape with no sticky on it, from a local garden center or farm store, and wrap those trunks up in the winter, so from October, late October, until mid-March, and then take it off. The white color of either deflects the sun's rays a lot better, and it, over time, will help those trees heal back up.
All right. The next person saying that they've had to replace a grove of quaking aspen trees, three of them, and they want to replace them with a different species. They dug out the existing root balls, but they need to know how to knock out the root system, which still wants to sprout.
Ouch. So the thing to do would have been to kill the trees first so that the insect or the herbicide got into the roots. And so now what they're going to have to do is just clip everywhere they see a sucker come up, and then immediately just take an old, like, 99-cent store paintbrush for watercolors and just dab a drop of concentrated Roundup where they cut.
All right, next one saying they want to apply mulch to trees. They heard not to use weed fabric and don't pile the mulch against the trunk. What is your recommendation?
Absolutely correct. With that, weed fabric is nice in certain situations. You know, if you're pouring, not pouring, but putting down a gravel driveway that you will be controlling weeds in fairly well, that fabric may be appropriate there. But we're just finding that there's a lot of unintended consequences with weed fabric, including it can sometimes interfere with water penetration and holding too much water in the soil. Weeds grow on top of it and then root into it, and it's terrible to try to get out. And so we just recommend using mulch only and keeping that mulch away from the edge of the tree trunk. When the mulch is piled against the tree trunk, it makes the tree more susceptible to being fed on by voles in the winter, and the trunk more susceptible to fungal diseases.
Okay, our next caller is John in Syracuse, also has a question on trees. Good morning, John. John, what is your question this morning? John, are you still there? Okay, let's put John on hold and take our next caller. Let's go to Barbara in Morgan. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. I have a Russian sage plant that I planted last year. It grew very well. I didn't know what to do when fall came, and so I just left it, but nearly all of the top died in the winter, and it's sprouting again, but I'm wondering what to do this fall.
Even though it gets great big, it's actually what we would call an herbaceous perennial, and you cut it down within 3 or 4 inches of the ground in the fall.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your call this morning. Let's take a call from Lois in Sandy. Good morning, Lois.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a little bush about knee high. I think it's salvia. So if I'm right, stop me there. But it's has little purple flowers, kind of at the tips for about 4 inches. And every year, about this time of year, it looks like somebody just shoved a softball in the middle of it and kind of killed it in the middle, and the branches just fan out and lay on the ground. It also gets a little bit of yellow on the leaves with some dark dots. What's going on with my little bush?
Well, it may have some iron chlorosis issues to where it can't get enough iron out of the soil.
Okay.
And it sounds like that if it is a salvia plant, that it may be time to divide it. Not right now, but this fall.
Okay.
And so if it dies back to the ground and then comes back from roots and, you know, sprouts new growth, what I would do is in late October to mid-November, just go out and split it in 3 or 4 pieces with a shovel and replant them.
Okay, great.
With the roots attached, the root mass, not don't just like cut anyway.
Of course. Okay, and then how do you know when a tree has so much bore that you should just get rid of it and start again?
What kind of a peach tree that I just love. A peach tree?
Uh-huh.
Okay, and is it mostly dead?
Well, not mostly, maybe a third of it. The bark is peeling off, and we've got the little amber kind of oozing out of it.
Out of the base?
Out of the branches, uh-huh.
Okay, and there could be a lot of different things. People often assume that the gummosis that you would see is automatically from borers, but I would suspect that you might have another disease in there called Pseudomonas or Cytospora. They're different diseases that look the same.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you get that in there, about all you can do is prune it out. But it is time to start treating for peach tree borer. So you would use a that I mentioned a high-yield farm and garden spray earlier. That one is registered for peach tree borer and is registered to spray on the trunk, and then you'd especially want to focus around the base of the tree. But if it looks like it's on its way out, but you can keep it for another 3 or 4 years, what I would recommend is planting another tree and getting it going while this one is declining.
Okay. How far apart should those trees be?
Oh, I mean, just with standard planting, 15 to 20 feet.
Okay. Okay. All right. And what should we put on the tree? Can you tell me that again?
The exact name slips me, but it's High Yield is the company.
High Yield.
And it's Farm and Garden Spray.
Farm and Garden. Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I love the garden show.
Thank you.
Thank you for doing it.
Thank you so much for listening. So, Ton, I'm trying to look at all these texts here. One of the texters was saying, is it a good time to spray for peach tree borers?
Yes, it's time to start treating for them. And that high-yield farm and garden spray will last 3 or 4 weeks. There is an organic one, Captain Jack's Dead Bug Brew, will last about a week to 10 days.
All right. Let's take our next caller, and that would be Howard in Springville. Good morning, Howard.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing very well, thanks. How are you doing?
Good, good. I have a question about an ornamental pear tree. It's about 14 years old, and it's been beautiful and big leaves and everything. And then this year, after the blossoms, I'm getting kind of these weak little sickly leaves throughout the entire tree and not really getting the full growth like we have in the past. And any ideas?
So how long has the tree been in?
It's been in about 12, 13 years.
Okay. And have you seen any branch dieback in it?
A little bit here and there, but nothing dramatic.
Okay. So, boy, and it's just getting smaller leaves?
Yeah. Leaves okay. Just kind of shrunk there a little bit. They're not, I wouldn't say shriveled, but they're curling a little bit.
Well, and what kind of tree did you say is it again?
It's an ornamental flowering pear.
Okay. Well, there could be a couple of things going on, and I don't know that it is fire blight, but because you would see branch die back from the tips, and that nest would not usually cause the smaller leaves, but it may have contracted a root disease that is preventing nutrient uptake. And so the new growth is stunted because it doesn't have enough mojo to make the bigger leaves.
Okay. Is there a treatment or something I can do for it?
Unfortunately, if it is a root disease, no. You could try a light fertilization to see if that helps. I mean, things that would make this worse or would mimic it would be too much water, if the water has changed at all and it was flooded for a long period of time, or the soil was just saturated for a long period of time would do that too.
Okay.
Sometimes too much fertilizer would... if you over-applied fertilizer, salt damage might cause something like this too.
Okay. Well, I will try and see what happens. I don't want to lose it because it's in the perfect spot. So I am reticent just to cut it down. So
all right, Howard. All right. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Before we take a break, let's go back to John in Syracuse. Good morning, John. What was your question?
Good morning. Are you having a blooming good day?
You betcha.
All right. What I've got, I ordered some hazelnut trees from a national concern nursery back in March. They came. I purposely and quickly potted them, and they were growing great. I planted them about 2 weeks ago now, but I think they're under stress because my leaves are turning brown on the edges. I don't know if I'm overwatering, underwatering. What can I do? I know there's transplant shock, but so I wouldn't think that it would be a transplant shock at this stage.
So were they European filberts or the American hybrid filberts?
They're the American hybrids, the Jefferson and the Theta.
So those are actually European. Yes, they are. So... And then when you planted them, were they fully established in the pot, or were they, fully established?
They're one of them was about 5 to 6 feet tall, and that's doing great. No problem at all. The other ones were about 3, maybe 4 feet tall.
How often are you watering them?
Unfortunately, I was watering about 3 times a week.
Okay, that may not be too much. And are you above or below the bluff?
I am above.
Okay, so you have a little bit better draining soil. All that you can really do at this point is just check the soil around the ones that are drooping and wilting. And if it's wet, don't water. And when it's still moist but on the drier side, that's when you want to hit them again.
Right. Kind of.
And even if they wilt down... There is a strong possibility that they will reform new leaves. And so even if they wilt down, don't give up on them.
Okay.
All right, John, thank you so much for your call this morning. We're going to take a break. We have a list of questions and callers still standing by. More of The Greenhouse Show coming up in just a moment.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria and Ton taking your questions this morning. Let's go right back to our phone lines to take a call from Sherry and Harriman. Good morning, Sherry. Hi, Sherry. Good morning. What's your question?
Yes, I have tomatoes. We're first-time tomato growers, and my husband built a box on the deck, and we filled it with the soil that was recommended to us, and then we put our tomatoes in, and the leaves are curling up. They haven't really produced very many leaves. They're kind of dark and yellow and drying up. We don't know if we're overwatering, underwatering. We don't know what we're doing wrong. Well,
so you used a commercial raised bed mix?
We did.
Okay.
We got it from the nursery, exactly what they told us to use. He lined the box with black plastic and then put holes in the bottom for drainage. And the water pours out of it when we water it.
Well, I don't know that I would have put the black plastic down there just because it can inhibit drainage. You could have lined the sides with it, but you do want better drainage. And so, but that's not necessarily the cause. What you're going to have to do is dig in the soil and see how wet the soil is, especially toward the base of the raised beds that you made or the boxes. And if it's extremely wet, you're probably going to have to put more drainage in it.
Okay. We put holes through it, and the water just pours out of it down to the patio below when we water.
What I would recommend doing then is just checking the soil, and those tomatoes are most likely going to need to be watered daily. But before you water, stick your finger in the soil and see if it is moist. The other thing that I would recommend doing is every once in a while, despite our best intents and our best efforts, so that those potting soils can be a little bit salty. And so I would send a soil test off to USU Soil Lab. If you go to the website, just the word usual.usu.edu, you can download the paperwork and you want the routine test. So usual.usu.edu and the routine test.
Routine test, is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. So if it is a little salty, what do we do?
Well, all the watering would leach the salts out, but it just depends. It's a place to start to make sure that too much salt isn't the problem.
So do you think that maybe we have the bed, maybe it's too hot because it's, you know, lined with this plastic? That wouldn't.
I don't. If you're getting water just gushing out like you could take a shower underneath, I doubt it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is a possibility, and it does need to be eliminated. And once that is gone, the next most common causes of this is too much or too little water.
Okay, so how wet should the soil be?
Moist, like a wrung-out sponge, is the perfect consistency. So it's going to be wetter when you water, but you want to let it dry out beyond that, but not bone dry. But during the hottest part of the summer, I suspect it'll require daily watering.
We have been watering it daily for like 10 minutes. We have several little sprinkler heads in there. And for 10 minutes every
day. You know,
it's,
unfortunately, until you monitor and get the soil test done, it's just guesswork. And I can tell you what to check for, but I can't say it's too much water, too little water, too much salt, too much fertilizer. And that's why I'm having you do these things so we can make some determinations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
you. You're welcome. Thanks for calling in. I saw you on the Facebook page.
All right, Sherry, thank you. Our next question coming from Harry. He says, they have a croton. I assume that's how you pronounce that they've had for many years, but the leaves are drying at the tips and curling and finally dropping. There have been no changes in maintenance. What do you think is going on there?
It may be suffering from old age. Those are not the easiest plants to grow indoors. And the other thing I would maybe check to see if it needs to be transplanted into a bigger pot.
Okay, next caller is Cynthia in Clearfield. Good morning, Cynthia.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, I have a question about a Rose of Sharon plant. I planted it about 3 years ago. It's in a nice sunny location, and I've got just a little drip line watering it about every other day, three times a week. And the plant has grown about 3 inches in the last 3 years. And I have no idea why it's growing so slowly.
So are you in the sandy soil area of Clearfield or the clay soil area?
I've got clay soil.
Okay. And so if you dug a hole in your ground about a foot deep and filled it with water, how long would it take the water to drain away?
You know
a few
what?
Hours.
I've never tried that before.
That's really important. Just because Rose of Sharon doesn't tolerate waterlogged soil. And so you could look at to make sure it's not getting too much water, but every once in a while, you'll get a plant that has root disease in it that doesn't kill it, but it doesn't allow it to grow. and you may have that situation too.
Okay. Like, so dig a hole, find out how long it takes and fill the water.
Yeah, and if it's, are you, if you have the clay soil, it should still be fine, you know, but if for some reason it takes that water 12 hours to drain out, you may need to back off on the water on your Rose of Sharon. Now, when you bought this Rose of Sharon, was it a variety called Lil' Kim? Not like the rapper, but... Okay, because there are some dwarf Rose of Sharon out, but they should be blooming. And is anybody pruning it?
No, I haven't pruned it because it hasn't grown enough to bother pruning
it. I suspect that it's a little too much water or that it might have a fungal disease in it preventing it from growing.
Okay, so if it's a fungal disease, how would I treat that?
Pull it out and plant Rose of Sharon in a new Rose of Sharon in a new spot.
Okay.
All right, Cynthia, thank you for your call this morning. Our next listener asking, they say they have a couple of tomato plants in a container and new potting soil. Not growing very fast. One is Brandywine, the other Celebrity. And they see tiny white spots on the leaves that look like white pepper. Is that damaging?
The white spots could be from something like spider mites, but it also could be hail damage. We've been seeing a lot of it. And I can't really tell them much, but I would have the soil checked and make sure that the plants are moist but not overwatered.
All right, let's go to Linda in Pleasant Grove. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. I was just calling about the English walnut trees. We have a probably very old. It was here when I was little, and I'm 76. So, but there's a group of them in the neighborhood. We've got about six in a three-block radius that are dying quickly. We there?
Yeah, you're fine. So
they came down and put USU came and put a thing on them. There's a trap on our black walnut tree, and yes, we do have the thousand cankers. Does that get into the English walnut? Or
it can. It definitely can, especially if they're grafted onto black walnut rootstock, which is a very common practice. So it sounds like we're up against a break. So I'll probably have you email some pictures over to gardenhelp@usu.edu.
Okay, gardenhelp@usu.edu. Okay, Linda, thanks for your call.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless. And I will never understand it. I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.